This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump visits troops. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Thursday, December 27. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump and the First Lady made a surprise visit to American soldiers in Iraq. Hear the message from the Commander-in-Chief.
After 4 days of a stock market meltdown, the major indexes charged higher by 5% in what some called a melt-up.
The Department of Homeland Security says it's increasing health screenings for children crossing the border illegally.
And how Amazon's massive job additions in New York and Virginia will not be done all at once.
Since 2010, they had 5,000 employees there. It's now over 45,000. So we've seen a huge impact in Seattle as they've added more than 40,000 people to that city. And I think they would like to lessen the impact of some of the hiccups that come along with traffic and tons of people waiting in line for lunch and all those things.
Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Stevens on the slow and steady approach to hiring by Amazon at its two new headquarters. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump have made a surprise visit to American troops in Iraq. Mr. Trump made a three-hour visit to the Al-Assad Air Base in western Iraq near the Syrian border. During remarks, the president defended his move to pull out the more than 2,000 military members the U.S. has in Syria, while also commending the troops for the near elimination of the ISIS territories in Iraq and Syria. Mr. Trump said he rejected requests by U.S. military commanders for more time to defeat the last remnants of ISIS in Syria. He reiterated his frustration that other countries were not doing more to tackle terrorist groups in that region.
If they want us to do the fighting, they also have to pay a price. And sometimes that's also a monetary price. So we're not the suckers of the world.
It was his first trip to a U.S. military combat zone. He received a standing ovation from the troops and later posed for selfies and signed several autographs. Surprise visits by presidents have been a hallmark of the holiday season since President Bush secretly traveled to Iraq in 2003 for Thanksgiving. What a day for stocks. After a bruising four-day sell-off, the Dow Jones Industrial Average surged more than 1,000 points yesterday for the first time in a single session. All 30 stocks in the Dow Industrial scored gains, same for all 11 sectors in the broader S&P. Shares of Amazon, Facebook, and Netflix were each higher by more than 8%. Hugh Johnson is Chief Investment Officer for Hugh Johnson Advisors.
You know the old expression, it's things are darkest before the dawn. And I think the declines we saw on Monday really overstated any problems we might be facing in the economy for 2019 or earnings for 2019.
Retailers like Kohl's and Macy's jumped thanks to promising early stats on the crucial holiday shopping season. Energy stocks, including ExxonMobil and Chevron, were all higher, largely due to a nearly 9% spike in oil prices. But as in many of the volatile days that have characterized markets since the end of September, investors and traders were left scratching their heads to explain the wild swing. Well, behind the broad, swift market slide of 2018 is an underlying new reality. Roughly 85% of all trading is on autopilot, controlled by machines, models, or passive investing formulas, creating an unprecedented trading herd that moves in unison and is blazingly fast. Wall Street Journal special writer Gregory Zuckerman says that market has grown up during the long bull run and has not until now been seriously tested by a prolonged downturn. Greg, what's up here?
Yes, the market really has transformed. It used to be guys like Peter Lynch who came home and their wife told them they like a certain brand of pantyhose and they'd go buy up the stock, and others using, you know, intuition and research. And now the market really is dominated by algorithms. So they dictate, they've got these preset models, and they dictate trading to a large extent, more than ever. and often they react kind of quickly, and they can add to the volatility of the market, and some argue that's what's happening lately.
Boy, so is there an argument to be made that it's better that there's no emotion involved here when, say, the machines are conducting, what, most trading?
Well, that's exactly right, that there is an argument for the machines in that for years we've seen behavioral mistakes as a whole slice of the economics profession, behavioral economics, which is dedicated to showing all the mistakes that we all make as investors, anchoring and other kind of mistakes where we panic, we've got greed, etc. And the hope is that using these preset recipes or algorithms, you will avoid kind of selling in a panic or buying in greed. They don't always work. The algorithms, the quant kind of guys, haven't necessarily outperformed. All of them haven't outperformed over the years, but that is the hope.
Wow. Did somebody guess that 85% of all trading is done by computers and algorithms?
Yeah, although that does include sort of market making, as they call it, people just sort of buying and selling to conduct business for other, for investors. When it comes to sort of investors themselves, the biggest chunk of the market right now is about 30%, and that is these they call them quantitative hedge funds. So and that's grown over the years. So yeah, they're a bigger part of the market than ever. It's again, it's not kind of people using intuition and old school. Fundamental research. These are people that have models, have set up certain models, and sometimes they buy, sometimes they sell, sometimes they add to the liquidity of the market, but often they also ride momentum and exaggerate moves.
Well, we're speaking with the Wall Street Journal's Gregory Zuckerman, special writer. He's got an interesting piece entitled Behind the Market Swoon, the Herd-like Behavior of Computerized Training. All right, so you referenced it a little bit. What about these preset inputs that these things act on? Is this going to make my eyes glaze over, or is it fairly like easy to understand?
I mean, quite frankly, a lot of them, not all of them, a lot of them are either reversion to the mean sort of strategies. So, hey, something went a little too far, be it on the upside or the downside, and they bet, these strategies bet that they're going to revert. Or they're betting on momentum. Hey, this has been up or been down. It's going to continue. The trend can continue. You know, they're quite sophisticated, and they can find effects, as I call them, or signals that are quite obscure and fleeting, and sometimes they don't even understand. The models don't understand. There's a lot of machine learning going on out there. But, yeah, they're not always that sophisticated, and they can be as simple as riding the momentum of the market.
Mm. So how do these things react when, say, I don't know, like the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, sits down to answer questions and blurts out no interest rate hikes next year? Right, the markets would obviously love that, right? But how does that get factored in? Does somebody actually have to input, here's what Mr. Powell said today or something?
Well, it's a good question. There are different types of models. There's some that pick up on words, like you say. They have this alternative data, they call it, and maybe it's a tweet from the president or somebody else, and they're programmed ahead of time. But a lot of other ones are just looking for patterns. And one stock, let's say a Ford versus GM, one goes a little too far in one direction, the other relative to the other one, so they buy one and sell the other. So they don't always necessarily trade the way you imagine a fund manager. Hey, where's the economy going? They don't really care sometimes, not always, but some of them don't really care as much where the economy is going. It's all relative kind of trading and little patterns that might be fleeting even in the market.
Is it fair to put that much trust in machines, computers, algorithms, preset inputs?
It's a good question. I would remember 1987, so there weren't as many preset algorithms back then, and we collapsed. So it's not to say, it's not clear if today is more dangerous or less dangerous. I do think short term, maybe it adds to the volatility, but if you're an individual investor, you can actually take advantage of the machines. I mean, we're up 1,000 points, and in last trading day, we're down like 600. If you're kind of a long-term investor, there are ways to take advantage.
So, boy, that's fascinating. So is it possible then, like, if these things were in place in 87, we wouldn't have fallen that far in that one day?
It's hard to tell. It's very hard to tell. It's a good question. You know, some of these guys, these algorithmic machine traders, add to the liquidity, and others have They step back. When things get a little too crazy, they don't trade at all, which hurts liquidity, hurts trading liquidity. But then again, that was always a criticism of the guys on the floor traders, New York Stock Exchange and others. Hey, when you most need them, they're not there. So it's not clear it's a more dangerous world than it used to be.
It's Wall Street Journal special writer Gregory Zuckerman. 16 minutes now after the hour, Homeland Security officials say the agency has stepped up health checks for migrant children and added Coast Guard medical personnel to help improve care for sick migrants after an 8-year-old Guatemalan boy died in Border Patrol custody on Christmas Eve. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Since the boy's death, officials say almost all children in Border Patrol custody have received a secondary medical screening. It was the second time a child died in Customs and Border Protection custody this month and came as Homeland Security faces growing questions from Congress. Homeland Security officials say such deaths are rare, noting that 6 people died in custody during the fiscal year that ended in September. Before that, it had been more than a decade since a child died in Border Patrol custody. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The Homeland Security Secretary has asked the CDC to look into what her department characterized as an uptick in sick people crossing the border illegally, especially children. Earlier this month, a 7-year-old girl, also from Guatemala, died at a hospital in El Paso, Texas, after she and her father crossed illegally into a remote part of New Mexico. It is 20 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
When President Trump once opined that it wasn't overly necessary for him to visit troops in danger zones abroad, but with the lights of Air Force One out and window shutters drawn, the president did just that, slipping into Iraq at night to greet U.S. service members. Addressing troops at an air base in western Iraq, Trump defended his decision to pull forces from neighboring Syria, declaring of Islamic State militants, "We've knocked them out. We've knocked them silly."
"It's because of your sacrifice that America's families can celebrate in safety and in peace. And we're doing great back at home."
Trump's trip follows several days of turmoil over his decisions to withdraw the 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria and push out Defense Secretary James Mattis 2 months earlier than planned for criticizing his policies. Matthew Whitaker, the acting U.S. Attorney General, incorrectly claimed on his resume and in government documents to have been named an academic All-American while playing football at the University of Iowa. Whitaker claimed to have been an academic All-American in his biography on his former law firm's website and on a resume sent in 2014. His name doesn't appear on the list of academic All-Americans on the website of the organization that bestows the annual honor. Wall Street notched its best day in 10 years as stocks rallied yesterday. The Dow Industrial soared 1,086 points, its biggest point gain ever. But investment advisor Hugh Johnson notes that the volatility likely isn't over.
"You're going to have some carryover. There'll be no question that the mood has sort of changed a little bit. But again, we're probably going to go back to a point where we have good days and bad days."
Even with yesterday's rally, the market remains on track for its worst December since 1931 and to finish 2018 with its steepest losses in a decade. Have gifts to return? Some stores make it easier than others. Consumer Reports analyzed national retail chains and found that Nordstrom, L.L. Bean, Costco, Eddie Bauer, and Zappos made it on the best list. So did JCPenney and Kohl's, since their hassle-free return policy has no time limit. On the tough for returning gifts list, Sears, Kmart, Barnes & Noble, Best Buy, and Apple. Consumer Reports says you shouldn't assume that just because it's a luxury-type store, it will have a liberal return policy.
Boy, Nordstrom and L.L. Bean, I feel, have always had those solid reputations for
tackling that stuff. Anything to bring back
this
year?
No. Well, I didn't get anything, so there's nothing to bring back.
Cole, you got Cole.
Well, I forgot to email Santa, so. Thanks, Jen. How you manage debt could have a big impact on how your retirement dreams play out. 4 in 10 retirees cite paying off debt as a current financial priority, according to a new survey. How do you get from here to there, then? Here's Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Kelly, explain.
For sure, easier said than done. The Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies had just put out a new report, essentially finding that 4 in 10 retirees say that paying off debt is a current financial priority for them. So they are going into retirement with some kind of debt. About 3 in 10 say they're really focused on credit card debt. Almost 20% have a mortgage, and 11% have some other sort of consumer debt, medical bills, student loans, auto loans, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a worth thinking about how you're planning around debt as you get into retirement, just because this can be something, depending on your ability to save, other elements of your financial situation, it can be a precarious situation.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of debt in retirement, but are there some or any tax advantages to having, say, some mortgage debt?
Well, you always want to look at that in context. As you said, there can be for some folks, in terms of that mortgage interest deduction, other things like that. And usually when we talk about that, it is most concerning. Financial advisors are worried about that credit card debt,
yeah,
because that is where you have the very high rates, the revolving balances, and it's not, when you're on a fixed income, it's really nice to have those fixed, predictable expenses, which usually a mortgage payment, auto loan, that's going to fall into those categories. Credit card debt can really quickly be a big part of your budget or a big problem.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kelly Grant. Yeah. Consumer reporter at CNBC.com. She's also a certified financial planner and has written a piece about paying off debt before you retire. So if it sounds great, how do we put the plan in action?
So ideally, you think about this, as you sort of hit your 50s, that you would be trying to reduce the amount of debt that you're carrying in with you. And the reason I would say 50s rather than, even later, even if you expect to retire in your 60s or 70s, is that we do see, again, from this report number, it's about half of retirees, actually a little more than half, who end up retiring earlier than expected. They are subject to a layoff. They leave the workforce to be a caregiver for someone in their family, or they have their own health issues. So obviously, you need to be aware of this potential for an early exit and be kind of thinking about your risk factors there. So it's a good idea to start early and work on paying off that debt where you can, and also be really cautious at that point about taking on new debt. Financial advisors are generally against 401k loans. That's something you should approach with caution, but especially when you're talking about a late career loan that, if you suddenly lose your job, you owe all of that money back.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Thursday, December 27. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Trump visits troops in Iraq. A huge day for stocks. Homeland Security promises changes to better protect illegal migrant children from illness. Christmas storm in the West is now making its way east. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg released from the hospital after lung cancer surgery. Severe weather canceled the ServPro First Responder Bowl between Boston College and Boise State. And the Oregon man who trekked across Antarctica without help. That story in about 20 minutes. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org. Amazon.com's announcement that it will bring 25,000 new jobs to both New York City and Northern Virginia has sparked a frenzy of local activity. Condos are flying off the market. City leaders are fighting over tax incentives. Businesses are already preparing for a rush of new customers. Lost, though, in all the commotion, it will likely take many years, if not a decade, before residents see a massive army of Amazon employees invading their cities. It's a story by Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Stevens. Laura, what are you hearing?
So it's interesting because a lot of people are expecting that there's going to be 25,000 workers that show up in their city tomorrow or something and are going to start working for Amazon. But really, it's going to be a much slower process than that. Most of these jobs are going to be added over 10 years. Next year, for example, Virginia is going to get about 400 jobs. New York's going to get about 700. So it's going to be a little bit slower than a lot of people are anticipating. And part of that's just because they're going to be doing organic growth versus hiring or sending people from Seattle over to these new campuses. It's going to be a lot of hiring locally and building it very slowly.
Yeah. And is there construction, I presume, or remodeling that has to take place on these campuses?
Right. Well, both of the cities already have significant Amazon presences, so they have a lot of office space already in those areas. But they'll have to start by remodeling some temporary office space that they're leasing in both Crystal City and in Long Island City in New York. And then after that, they'll be able to break ground. But that's going to probably take a couple of years just because of the site approvals and all the pre-construction stuff that they have to do.
Hmm. If this were to all happen in 6 months, I guess that those cities or locations could be overwhelmed in some way, right?
Right, definitely. And I mean, this is something where Amazon's been pretty cautious the entire time, and that's part of the reason they ended up splitting the headquarters in two, was because it can be a huge influence to put that many workers in a city. And in Seattle alone, they've added, since 2010, they had 5,000 employees there. It's now over 45,000. So we've seen a huge impact in Seattle as they've added, you know, about more than 40,000 people to that city, to the downtown area where they have their main campus. And I think they would like to lessen the impact of some of the hiccups that come along with traffic and tons of people waiting in line for lunch and all those things with that many employees.
Boy. All right. So, I mean, in total, we've all heard these numbers, right? 50,000 employees spread over these two sites, $5 billion in investments over the next two decades. But what if the economy slows?
Right. It's a big question. Amazon's only been around for a little over two decades. It's pretty new. It's been growing at an incredibly rapid pace. But, you know, there's so many different things that could happen that could change that. There's a lot of regulatory scrutiny right now from D.C. that could have some kind of impact on the company. And additionally, there could be some kind of economic slowdown like you're describing, or something else could happen. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's unpredictable to say how quickly they can continue to grow because they've been growing so incredibly rapidly for the last few years that growth may be hard to sustain.
Hmm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Stevens. Her piece is called Why the Amazon Invasion in New York and Virginia Will Be Slow. What does this mean for, say, managers and their teams?
So that was an interesting thing that we learned in our reporting. Originally, Amazon said, and it's always kind of maintained, that nobody will have to relocate. But a lot of people were actually kind of concerned that they might need to move from Seattle to one of the new locations just because, especially when it was going to be one HQ2, that they would really need to move some team leaders and move some different people there. With the two headquarters, that's less of a threat at this point. At least that's the way that a lot of executives feel. And Amazon's, of course, said that nobody will be forced to relocate.
What about cohesion? I know you addressed that because you got Seattle, Northern Virginia, New York City. Is there like going to be fights for supremacy or anything like that?
I don't think there'll be fights for supremacy. The idea is to kind of have these all play equal roles at some point in the distant future, I believe. But yeah, like it's an interesting thing because Amazon has a very strong culture, and they already have 18 tech hubs around the country with more than 20,000 employees, and they've managed to do a lot of cohesion through some of their different internal principles that they have. You know, the way that they do things is very structured and definitely something where they've laid it out to try to keep the company cohesive.
Thanks, Laura. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Stevens. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday Eve, Beyond the Headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know there are some things about our politicians that we're more willing to overlook than we used to, but bad food choices or food cooking apparently is not one of them. This after Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms caused a minor Twitter uproar on Christmas Day when she tweeted out photos of several food items served for her holiday meal. According to Fox News, the dishes included Brussels sprouts, a leg of lamb, and jambalaya, but the one that sparked a cheesy string of responses was her mac and cheese that some on social media dubbed a crime. Despite not being able to taste or see it in person, Twitter users roasted Bottoms mac and cheese for looking dry. The tweet received more than 600 replies and 1,400 likes as of yesterday. The picture dried out my contact lens, one user wrote, while another person wrote, "Someone should run a primary challenge against you for your crimes against macaroni and cheese." Another person tweeted, "I'm afraid to click that and make it full screen. It might suck all the humidity out of my room." To her credit, Bottoms didn't shy away from the mac and cheese controversy, tweeting back that there was nothing dry about her mac and cheese.
Oh.
Yes. And then her, you know, lightheartedly. And then her, actually her family, I guess, came to her defense as well. They actually ate it and they said, no, that was not dry. That was some great mac and cheese that mom made.
Well, it doesn't matter to Twitter.
Yeah, right.
You're just going to get buried no matter what, with no evidence, nothing. Yeah. Who cares?
But the top of the mac and cheese, because, you know, it looks like obviously she topped it with some cheese and put it in, you know, maybe under the broiler for a couple minutes to get that sort of crispy top.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's going to look dry on top. It's when you dig in, that's the real test.
Right.
So, yeah.
So the homemade, I presume.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, often has that, you know, maybe crispy finish to the top.
Right.
Unlike the stuff you might microwave or boil.
Right. Yeah. Right. This isn't Stouffer's we're talking about.
It's
here.
Not leftover.
Right.
You know, which, you know, if it's Kraft, it needs a little extra butter and milk, perhaps a little water the next day to revive it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No,
you can tell I have experience.
Yeah. No, it looked great to me. She can make me mac and cheese anytime.
Right.
Invite us over her house.
Throw some
next
lobster
time
crab in there.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yes.
Spice it up.
And attention, Michigan residents, or anyone who may have been in the Great Lakes State around this time last year. You may have won the lottery, don't even know it, and now your time to claim your prize is running short. The Michigan Lottery is trying to find the holder of a $25,000 a year for life lottery ticket that is due to expire in just 1 week. The lottery said the Lucky for Life ticket, which was drawn on New Year's Day of this year, will become worthless at 4:45 p.m. on January 2nd. The ticket, which also offers an option to collect a one-time $390,000 lump sum, was purchased from a grocery store in Plymouth. Of course, if the ticket goes unclaimed, the winner's loss could be a gain for Michigan students, as the prize money would go to the state's school aid fund.
Wow.
So I guess, you know, perhaps some education officials are keeping their fingers crossed.
Right, right.
In Michigan, hoping that this person doesn't show up. And, you know, if almost a year later, they probably won't.
25 grand a year?
A year.
For life.
For life.
That's nice.
Know, yeah, it's not bad to have that little padding, right?
Absolutely.
That floor on your income.
What's weird? We got two stories like this floating around. You got this one and then that Mega Millions.
Yeah.
From October in South Carolina, worth $1.5 billion. That has not been claimed.
Talk about some new schools for everyone in South Carolina,
right?
If that doesn't
all across
claimed.
America.
Yeah, everybody gets a laptop.
It's incredible. I mean, check your wallets, check under the seats,
check your
console.
Yeah. Please.
Wow. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. What should we do about all this stock market volatility? Many of us have been asking questions on social media. MarketWatch put together a list of them with answers. Number one, does volatility affect all retirement accounts? The answer, generally yes. Individual retirement accounts and 401k plans are investment-based. Number two, I was going to open a retirement account. Should I wait? The answer, no. Market volatility could seem scary, but it can benefit you in the future because you're buying right now at a lower price. Number three, should I move my traditional IRA to a money market account? The answer, probably not. A traditional IRA assumes the account is intended for retirement longer term, whereas a money market account has fewer potential returns because it's considered short term. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump made a surprise visit to U.S. troops in Iraq, his first trip to a conflict zone nearly 2 years into his presidency, and days after announcing a pullout of U.S. troops from neighboring Syria. Accompanied by First Lady Melania Trump and speaking at an airbase west of Baghdad, Trump defended the withdrawal from Syria and said it was made possible by the defeat of Islamic State militants.
The other reason I'm here today is to personally thank you and every service member throughout this region for the near elimination of the ISIS territorial caliphate in Iraq and in Syria.
Trump has drawn fire from some in the U.S. military for not having visited U.S. troops in a conflict zone since taking office, particularly after he canceled a trip to a World War I cemetery in France last month due to rain. Chances look slim for ending the partial government shutdown anytime soon, and although the Senate is slated to come into session this afternoon, few senators are expected to be around for it. After a weekend and two holiday days for federal employees, yesterday was the first regularly scheduled workday affected by the closure of a variety of federal services. Upbeat data on holiday sales and the Trump administration's efforts to shore up investor confidence led to a buying frenzy on Wall Street yesterday, with the Dow Industrial surging 1,086 points. White House Council of Economic Advisers Chairman Kevin Hassett attempted to temper President Trump's recent attacks on Fed Chairman Jerome Powell.
Is the Fed Chairman's job safe?
Yes, of course, 100%. Yes.
100%. Fed Chairman's job is not in jeopardy by this president.
Absolutely. That's correct.
Hassett's comments come days after Trump described the Fed as the only problem in the U.S. economy. For the fifth year in a row, Serena Williams has been voted the AP Female Athlete of the Year. Williams reached the finals at Wimbledon and the U.S. Open after a remarkable return to tennis that followed four surgeries she needed after developing blood clots following the birth of her daughter on September 1, 2017, gymnast Simone Biles was second in the voting.
Serena Williams cannot be stopped. I feel like it's
be interesting to see where she is when the Australian Open starts later in January.
In terms of seeding?
And seeding and how she's doing. I mean, she came so close, and then that whole uproar at the end of the U.S. Open, and
right.
Then she quit playing for the rest of the year. It'll be interesting to see.
It's fascinating to see because she's obviously not ranked number one right now. So I don't know where she is in the rankings. 30th and is the athlete of the year, right? That's how good she is. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. An Oregon man has become the first person to traverse Antarctica alone without any assistance. It took 54 days. Colin O'Brady of Portland finished the bone-chilling 930-mile journey yesterday. Family, friends, and fans were tracking him online in real time. Mr. O'Brady, who's 33, was documenting his journey on his Instagram page. He wrote yesterday that he covered the last roughly 80 miles or so in one big final push that took well over an entire day. Though others have traversed Antarctica, they either had assistance with reinforced supplies or kites that helped propel them forward. Mr. O'Brady had to haul 375 pounds of gear largely uphill and over sastrugi, or these wave-like ridges created by wind. Last month, he woke up one day to find his sled completely buried in snow. That day, he battled a 30-mile-an-hour headwind for 8 hours. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.